latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Let me go. Don't want to be alone. And let the music pump right through me. I can feel it in my bones. Got to get up. Get up. To get it all out. Get out. And let the rhythm take a hold. Watch me shake it all out. Set me free. Set me free. Let the fire.
Zoe Badwig. Nice. I guess we're going to get a chance to release ourselves from the hard news. The hard news dominated the first hour today. Johnny D is going to join us momentarily, and we'll talk racing, including what went on at the Kentucky Downs. Next, days three and four in the books now, and Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, awfully fun, and let's be honest, it was a formful series of races, and we'll talk to Rusty Arnold, who won with both Morticia and Totally Boss, who, you know, ended up being heavily bet. But Morticia, there was a lot of wire winners, actually. over the weekend at Kentucky Downs. And Zulu Alpha, who, I don't know, looked like a beach ball to me. And Zulu Alpha won going away. Michael Maker, after a slow start to the meet, Maker getting his wins. And it was actually a fairly formful weekend everywhere that I was watching. I mean, Belmont, I think there's been two horses over $10 in the first 3 days. There's Johnny D joining us now. Johnny, it's been a chalk fest. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, it's been a chalk fest. This time of year, coming off the heels of Saratoga and Del Mar, for me, I know action continues and I continue to follow it, but for me, the wagering and the, you know, the head buried stuff kind of lightens up a little bit. This time of year, I guess it just harkens back to my days of being in Southern California when you came off of Del Mar and Fairplex would open, and it was a very different group of horses, very different racing, and some of the more serious players kind of took that as vacation time. I had to go to work seriously at that time because I really, as a couple of jocks I had, did very well at Fairplex. So Fairplex was a big time of the year for me, especially early on. But anyway, this is a good time of year. Plus, I know nobody wants to hear it, football started this weekend. And the NFL in full swing, college football full swing. And, you know, I love racing. It's been my career. I absolutely love it. I think it's a great game, and it's been a great gambling game for decades in this country. And it still is. But football's been a part of my life, too, along the way. And I would say I started wagering on football long before I started wagering on horses. I prefer wagering on horses now because of the odds. Because you can get 6-1 in one race. You can get 20-1 in one race. You can lose all day, come to the last race, pick a winner, and be out for the afternoon. That's hard to do in football. You know, betting 11 to win 10 or betting parlays or however you want to do it, tough to make a big score and to rally like you can in racing. But anyway, once football starts, I kind of, you know, just kind of lean in that direction to get a feel for what's happening. Still following racing, still on top of things, but, and of course the Eagles started, and that's my home team, and I had to make sure I was here to watch the Eagles, and Gail and I, every time Eagles score the touchdown, we sing the fight song at home on the couch. It's quite a sight, actually. She gets up and does the little dance, and we sing the song. So, you know, it's an important part of life here in Philadelphia. So, I heard you earlier. You said, you know, how people, oh, you really like to hear us talk about the Eagles, and I'm sure that was tongue in cheek. Like most people don't want to hear about us talk about the Eagles, but. Hey, if you're going to enjoy us the rest of the year, you can put up with our crap for a little while.
Exactly, exactly. Well, and I think I won't say the majority, but it does seem like the audience base, there is a big percentage that are Eagle fans, and I'm going to guess that the ones that were neutral we've won them over, Johnny. And because there's enough out there that dislike Eagle foes, Dallas particularly. And then when it came to the Super Bowl, I had a lot of people write to me, I'm ordinarily not an Eagle fan, but I'm rooting with you because they're playing the Patriots. So I think we've got over 50% of the audience is with us at this point.
That's not bad. Not
no,
bad.
Not at all.
Newsflash for those New England haters. Could be a long year for you. Watching them dismantle Pittsburgh last night and then, you know, having Antonio Brown, you know, waiting in the green room. This could be a Tom Brady, Bill Belichick working with that offense they have, adding Antonio Brown. Wow. It could be fun to watch, but not if you're anti-New England.
Well, that whole thing was a very strange. And you know, it's funny in retrospect, the way it all came, it all now feels like it was somewhat orchestrated. That it was orchestrated to look chaotic. The whole thing stinks from afar. I'll just say that I found the whole thing bizarre, but who cares? They're so easy to root against. Then there's us who are so easy to root for because only in Philadelphia would fans try to pick a fight with a member of the Sixers who showed up at the game wearing a Redskin jersey. This gives you a real feel for the guy. There's no, oh, he's a Sixer, it's okay. It's like, no, it's not okay.
It makes it worse, actually. I got a kick out of the announcers. And I think we had like the third string announcers this week. But anyway, listening to them, and at halftime, the Eagles were heading in, the teams are leaving the field, and the stadium, you can hear it on the television, is just resounding with boos, like coming from everywhere. And the announcer said, boy, you know, these fans, they're booing their team. Well, what are you supposed to do? You're 10.5 point favorites, and you're down by, what were they down by, 17 or something? You're supposed to boo. That's what the sound was created for that exact situation. You know, when a team shows up and you have these high hopes for your offense, which is, by the way, they've got some weapons there. And DeSean Jackson is just, you know, he's just stretched the field and he's opened things up. And we've got Ertz, the quarterback, and we've got that just a solid offense, good offensive line, and nothing. Nothing in that first half. Just blah. And that's when you're supposed to boo. So, you know, sometimes we get a bad rap. Sometimes we get a rap that we deserve. Philly fans have done things over the years that I'm certainly not proud of. But when it comes to this city's approach to its athletes, I will say this. If you come to Philadelphia and you're an athlete and you try hard every time, you go out there and play hard and try hard, this city will not only accept you, it will embrace you. There are so many players who love this city, who played here, who love this town, who love the fans. And what this city will not stand for are players who don't give top effort. It will not stand for that. And you come out flat and you know, look like you're going half speed for whatever reason, you're going to hear about it immediately.
Well, there were two things, actually. Who was it that, I think it was Alshon Jeffrey who said, That's why I love it here. He says, because if you play like that, you're going to get booed, and that's what makes them great. And then they actually showed the Brandon Graham clip from after the Saints game. Did you see this?
No.
They Fox had footage of him after the playoff game when he thought he had played his last game in an Eagle uniform. And, you know, all emotional and hugging everybody and saying goodbye because he thought he wouldn't be back. And it just, there's a perfect example. I mean, it's, Listen, we
I'm glad you brought that up because he's got this thing he started with one of the local sports guys, and it's on the local show after the game. And actually, Pennsylvania's former governor Ed Rendell comes on to give his take on the game. This is every week, and he did this when he was governor. He would come on and give his analysis of the game and analysis of the season and his comments. And after the game, they have a camera in the tunnel there, wherever they're playing. And as the players come off the field, and coaches and owner and everyone, they walk by the camera there and they go into the locker room. Brandon Graham has made a habit of stopping to chat with a local sports guy. And they've kind of had a banner going on over the years, you know, like Brandon Graham will point at him and say, you weren't with us. You picked against us. You were wrong, you know, and they developed this relationship over the years. And so it's become like part of the show now that Brandon Graham has to stop on the way into the locker room to add his 2 cents. So I can see where, you know, a guy who develops a following in this town, he still is a solid player. So, you know, I understand it.
Well, we'll want to know, and we'll go from there. And looking forward to 2 weeks from now, we'll be down, and we've got our traditional Pennsylvania Derby cotillion and our non-solo pasta dinner, and then on to Sunday and the Lions. The last time I think I saw the Lions, God, I'm just trying to think about who might have been. Bobby Lane may have been quarterback. I can't think. I can't remember the last time I saw the Lions live.
Milt Plum.
Holy cow!
Hey, how about in the Eagles game, which we're going to stop talking about here soon, but the Eagles. We're up 32-20 with 3 minutes left. Washington goes 16-play, 75-yard drive with a touchdown pass with 6 seconds to play. Well, Washington was a 10-point dog at most sports, but 10.5 at some places.
Yeah.
They covered the spread 32-27 defeat. And the announcers, it was interesting what they say. That touchdown means something to some people.
To some people.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard him say that.
And it was a seven-figure swing in favor of the house at Caesars.
Wow.
How about that, huh?
Wow.
Seven-figure swing. It also, Washington's cover, also was the MGM's biggest win of the day in Las Vegas. The head sportsbook guy, Jeff Stoneback, wasn't even watching the game. He heard one of his employees cheer. He said, "What happened? Washington covered." That's your backdoor cover. That is your textbook backdoor cover there. Yeah,
big time. Well,
Steve, as I talked about, I'm interested in the wagering, you know, with the NFL. And since now that they've partly admitted that there's some wagering on their games, they finally admitted. And actually, they tried to get into bed with the operators of the wagering on their games, or they are in bed with them. Anyway, I noticed something, a type of wager, that I guess was around last year. It started in Australia. And it's kind of spread. And I was not aware of this until now. And I guess I just missed the boat on it. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's called points betting. And how it works is, let's use it for an over-under on a NBA game, let's say. Let's say the over-under is 200. And you want to bet the over. So you bet $5 on the over. And let's say they go 10 points over. Well, you would then get $50 back for your wager. Let's say they lose let's say they go the total instead of, let's say the total is 200, it goes 210, you get $50 back for your $5 investment, 10 times your $5 investment. And let's say it doesn't, it goes 190, so it's 10 points below 200. Well, then it's going to cost you $50 instead of $5. So the more right you are, the more you get paid. The more wrong you are, the more it costs you. And you can set limits on either end of where you want to go with this type of wager. And I think that's really interesting. And I kind of wondered what the application might be in racing. For example, this weekend, right? Someone bet made a $30,000 bet on the Ravens -6 against the Dolphins. And the bettor chose to set the maximum win-loss at 20 times their initial wager. So the Ravens won 59-10, and the bettor won $600,000. So if you adapted this to horse racing, you know, calls, margin calls during a race are done by the equibase chart callers at each track. They estimate the margin calls at each point. The final margins, however, are accurate. The final margins are accurate. They are official, accurate margins, done by, it took a long time to explain it, but they're actually accurate. So, could we have this wager in horse racing? Is this interesting at all? Now you've got a favorite who's 3-5. That maybe you can bet how many lengths he's going to win by, and set the parameter at, you know, 10 times. I think if he wins by 10 lengths, I want 10 times my bet. If he loses by 10 lengths, I want, you know, 10 times my bet on the other side. Now, I obviously this is not a parimutuel wager at this point, so I don't know where it fits in. Maybe this is a wager that can be used by the sports book. A horse racing, you know, we see these wagers one horse against another, matchups. Maybe this is another type of a wager that can be introduced. I don't know if this is what.
It's funny you bring it up, because as the Tina and I sat down to watch the Eagle game, and Fox was pushing this contest that they're doing. It's like a pick six, you know, pick six games. And it has that provision. It's got a points provision in it where you basically you pick a side and your point range. And I didn't really think anything of it, you know, other than it being a wrinkle, but you know, here's the you know, the sports wagering tie-in, obviously.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. As the sports wagering grows, and I don't know about other places. I guess it's been in New Jersey the longest, obviously. And the wager I just told you about, the points betting wager, supposedly that was offered in New Jersey. I don't know exactly where, but supposedly it was offered in New Jersey somewhere. So they seem to be the most developed as far as, besides obviously Nevada, Las Vegas. but they seem to be the most developed. Because I tell you, I was looking at some of the stuff in Pennsylvania, and we have a way to go to get kind of caught up with what's being offered offshore. I don't know exactly what's in New Jersey because I don't live there, so I'm not, I don't have an account or anything, but Pennsylvania, we need to go a little bit to catch up. And it's going to take some time. Obviously, it's new. But it's not going to stop. It's not going away. It's just going to expand and expand and expand. And, you know, horse racing, you know, we have had new bets introduced. And some of them are better than others for different reasons. And some of them make sense and some of them don't. But let's not stop. You know, let's keep finding ways to make our game more. Look, you just said this weekend's races, a bit of a snooze fest with chalk, chalk, chalk. You know, it's, you know.
Well, from a better, but, well, from not, a all races, not, from yeah, a betting, not all the races yeah. were boring. I mean,
no,
certainly
no,
that.
No, no, I'm saying from a betting.
Belmont
yes,
Derby.
Yes,
yeah.
No, I didn't mean that. There were some great performances over the weekend, great races. But from a wagering standpoint, things were, you know, quiet.
Yes.
But if you can turn, you know, you like a 4-5 shot, if you can turn him into a, you know, making 5-1 or 6-1, that makes it a lot more interesting.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, well, that's.
I don't know. I don't know if that works. You know what I mean? I just thought of this. I don't want to be rushed. I just thought of this morning. There's a lot of work. You know, I read the story. I said, look, how does this apply to racing? And I thought of this, but I know there's a lot of work that needs to be done with it. You can't just slap it on there. But this is the kind of stuff that we should be looking at. You know, look. The most obvious is the future book. That's the most obvious one. Like, now that sports wagering is legal in certain states, can't we put up, maybe racing is not a sport. I think it is. The last I checked, it was. Can we put up one of these sports books, you know, do what Johnny Bell used to do? I hope. I don't know if DraftKings is interested. I think that's who John's with now. No, maybe he's with the other guys. Wait a minute, I'm confused, but can he put up a future yeah. book or make, you know?
Well, I think that suggestion.
What's the other one? I think he's with the other one. What's the other one?
FanDuel.
I don't know. I'm confused. Okay, go ahead.
Well, DraftKings and FanDuel are the two.
Yeah, but I can't remember which one he's with.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
DraftKings.
I think the concern was that, you know, that Churchill controls that entity, and that they were seemingly limiting, you know, the potential to do
yeah.
that. We've discussed this for years. Steve Crist used to rail at this from the minute from the minute that the Derby future wager was even instituted. He said, "Wait a minute,
yeah.
we can book pick fives, pick sixes. We can book parlays. We can do all these things. How can we not program, you know, virtually every single horse that's nominated, all 600 horses that are nominated for the Triple Crown season? Doesn't make any sense."
Well, you just answered the question, because what was that famous line? Horse racing is an industry/sport where they can't agree whether horse racing is one word or two. I mean, you know, we get in our own way sometimes.
That's actually funny. I'd not heard that. Let's hit a couple of performances and you know what you might have bet on. I pretty much just played Saturday, didn't play yesterday, but the Kentucky Downs action is just too much fun to not watch the board and try to come up with some plays. And Yeah, I played Belmont too on Saturday. That Jockey Club Derby, where Spanish Mission beats the one of the other imports, and the imports ran 1-2-3 in here. And tomorrow when we talk to Andy, you know, there's some issues. Andy brought up a great point. If you were watching the show on Saturday, Andy said, rightly, the Euros have a mammoth, the three-year-old Euros have a mammoth advantage in this particular edition, the third leg of this turf triple, because those horses have been running these distances much earlier than our three-year-olds. Our three-year-olds have been running in their restricted turf races. They've been running a lot of miles. And, yes, they've got some options open to them to face elders and go longer, but there's really no need for that when they can run in races like the Saranac, and even the Secretariat has now been cut back in distance. And so Euros coming over that have run a mile and three-eighths and a mile and a half through the season, they're going to have us over a barrel in this particular edition when they get to this, you know, September running of these two races.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you can almost go a step further and say that the Euros, look, they can send their, and I don't mean this to be, it's just the way it is. They can send their third team over and have a great shot in these races. It's just the way it is. They race on turf, we race on dirt. You know, our biggest races in this country, attention wise, the Kentucky Derby, Triple Crown racing, if you want to go that far, on dirt. Breeders' Cup Classic, dirt. We're a dirt country. They're a turf country. They're a distance country where a mile and a quarter is, you know, you run that in the Derby and you run a mile and a half in the Belmont, maybe. It's almost as if you're a weirdo. You know, you're going to run a mile and a half in the Belmont, you know, because you don't get to do that so often. And then we have the Classic, a mile and a quarter. You have certain races big races that are a mile and a quarter, Travers. But distance on turf is not our predominant game. It's not what you got the Keeneland sale coming up. Is distance turf breeding going to be at the forefront of the horses purchased? No, it's not. So that's not what we do here.
Not with 3-year-olds at this time of year.
That even accentuates it. Yes.
Yeah.
That even takes it one step further. So Andy's, you know, absolutely correct. And you know, even when you talk about a bigger picture, their turf horses are better than our turf horses. It's just most of the time. We have moments, absolutely. We have when Tepin won at Ascot, that was a moment. We had a moment. Wesley Ward's success at Ascot has mostly been where? 2-year-olds sprinting. Okay. So we're faster than them early on. The turf or dirt, we're probably faster than them because we're trained that way. We're bred that way. We're trained that way. Not that we can't have a distance horse, but we can't have a good horse. Not that we can't have a great turf horse. We can. It's just not our focus. Over there, it's their complete focus. So they have a deeper bench. And they can send these horses over who dominate our turf races, especially the 3-year-olds, because Andy's point's exactly correct. Because that's what they're planning. Their program is geared towards this. When they come over here to race on dirt, for the most part, you know, you need a search warrant to find them. It's a different game. It's not their game. It's not, first of all, it's not their best horses that are coming over to race on dirt. It's something that they think, you know, this one might do on dirt because of his breeding and you know, he's not going to quite make it here. Let's go ahead and take a shot at, you know, $1 million over in the U.S. on the dirt. When it comes to the turf, they say, yeah, he's probably not going to win the big races over here, but he can get a distance and he's doing well. Let's go over there. We could beat those horses on grass. So anyway, I think that's kind of how it shapes up. And I don't know, you know, this whole New York idea, this NYRA idea of the turf series, you know, it's a great idea, but and it's okay with me when the foreign horses come over and win. I'm not offended. Maybe it's a good thing for the game overall, because you start to, as you handicap the foreign horses, you start to look at the races and you start to kind of build up an understanding of, you know, what you're going to need for the Breeders' Cup, what you're going to need to know. Who are the horses that have been beating these horses? Not just the three-year-olds, but the older horses, too, that have come over and done well. So it kind of enriches your knowledge of the overall European picture, which certainly helps when the Breeders' Cup comes around. And, look, racing's becoming more worldwide. We see it all over. You know, I don't know how much since you've been back, I don't know how much you've talked about the Dubai race. Not Dubai, the Saudi Arabia race.
I haven't talked about it at all. I'll be honest. I haven't talked about it at all because
don't be honest with me. I can't handle it.
I haven't talked about it because I find it so offensive that I will go off on a variety of elements of it.
See, I knew that. That's why I asked you about it.
Yeah.
No, I understand. I understand your offense to it. I understand reasons for that. Feeling, but it's on the calendar, and it's going to affect what happens here in the racing world. I don't need to, you know, I mean, if someone is offended by it, I certainly understand that, and they don't need to support it. But at some point, we're all going to have to deal with it because it's there. It's on the calendar. It's in. If you're a horse owner and you are lucky enough to own a horse that can maybe get a piece of that, you've got some thinking to do now. There's some decisions to be made. There's going to be some chess pieces moved around. So, you know, that's on dirt. Of course, they're going to have their turf counterpart. And same thing with, you know, how will it affect Dubai? Are there too many of these? Can there be too many? If you ask the guys at Keeneland right now, they say no. Let's have a few more of them. But as far as are we spreading too thin? Will it keep older stars around longer? Where they won't, you know, where they won't. Can you get crazy and run in all three? I don't think so. Can you run in two of the three? Maybe you could go Pegasus, Dubai. Can you run in Saudi Arabia, Dubai? Yeah, I guess you could do that. I know there are reasons to be offended, but it's definitely going to have an effect on what happens at the upper echelon of our sport. Now it's only going to affect a couple of horses, but maybe this has now opened the floodgates to let guys who previously wouldn't have a shot at a big purse have a shot at one of these three purses now because of the thinning of the talent pool, and that can only be good for horse owners, horse breeders, you know. Anyway, We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't ignore it. I mean, it's here.
Well, I've ignored it pretty successfully up till now.
Well, yeah, but there's some point you're going to... Come January, are you going to be able to ignore it?
I'll do my best.
That's why we love you.
There were a couple of things about Spanish Mission's win. Congratulations to Team Valor and their, as Gary, as Siaka calls him, the Earl of Mac, which makes me laugh every time. Spanish Mission gets up. And, you know, watching that finish, Johnny, that motion, that animated riding style that, you know, that Spencer employs, I just don't get it. How is it not? I'll bring this up with Tony this week, and I don't know if I've ever discussed it with him, but you know, compared to Tony Piccione, the way he was riding Pedro Cara, and I guess there's a lesson here somewhere. Pedro Cara, the other Euro, the third Euro, goes off as the longest price on the board. And he comes in, on a nice win streak. I mean, granted, I don't think we've ever seen a horse in this country that won the Spanish Derby. That one was new to me. The Gran Premio Villa Paderna Spanish Derby at Madrid, and he also had won at Vichy, you know, which is kind of a second tier, you know, on the French circuit, but. Pedro Cara ran a whale of a race to get beat as up. And in the meantime, Jamie Spencer is doing that flailing and that motion. How is that not taking away from the horse's action?
I don't know. I have to agree with you. And then, of course, it didn't help that he lost the reins with that rein slapping in the breeze. Who knows, maybe that rain slapping next to Spanish Mission's head scared him, frightened him into running faster. Maybe he thought there was a predator in pursuit, in close pursuit, with that rain slapping away. I don't know. You know, I watch these European guys, and I see them all over these horses, and I don't understand it. I really don't. I'm not a jockey. I'm not a riding expert, but I agree with you. Just from kind of like common sense. Like if you were running, and there was someone on your back, and they were sitting still, you know, first of all, running with someone on your back would be a burden to begin with. But if they were sitting still, if they were tight on there, it would be much easier to run in a straight line and run faster than if they were kind of wiggling around on your back. You would be pulled in different directions. Right? That's just it's a layman's, and I call myself a layman. I'm not when it comes to horsemanship. I'm a layman. Doesn't make sense. Now I will say this: that the better riders in Europe, from what I've seen, call me crazy, but from what I've seen, don't move around so much. The top guys, Ryan Moore and some of those. Now, Spencer's respected.
No doubt.
Yeah, he's one of the ones. But most of the top guys, Frankie Dettori particularly, spent time in the U.S. purposefully to learn the quote-unquote American style of riding. And, you know, shorter stirrups, down low, flat back, you know, closer up to the neck. And he's done pretty well over there. So maybe it does matter. I can't imagine it doesn't matter. So in that case, you got to give Spanish Mission extra points, but I got a little confused because the fact that Spanish Mission hadn't won the Spanish Derby, I was a little confused. It didn't seem right.
Well, that's actually another big advertisement for Noble Mission. After 2 weeks after the Travers win by Code of Honor. Another Noble Mission, high profile, high dollar.
Always nice to have a big game before the draft. In other words,
exactly.
You want your sire to have a big weekend right before Keeneland.
Well, and also, and then we got to wrap up. I got a hatful of trainers to talk to, but in the Oaks, let's talk about the Oaks for 2 seconds. Here, you at least you did get an American to hit the board, that being Tom Albertrani with Dynapasser, who I thought ran really well. And Romantic Pursuit ran well too, actually, for Kieran and Godolphin. But it was Adisa, and Here's a Kitten's Joy that the Aga Khan bred. And it's funny. I just love the fact that, the Aga Khan, because you talk about the Aga Khan, and how many Aga Khans have there been? Right. It's one of those rare entities where you have a royalty that applies to every single one of the Khans of Aga, the one after the other. Right. I mean,
I don't know. When I was a kid, they used to say, "Who do you think you are, Aga Khan?"
Well, exactly.
He's still
always
around. He's still breeding horses, this guy.
It's the same. Exactly. I mean, it's like Lassie. It's just like Lassie, where there's like one after another, and they're indistinguishable. They're the Aga Khan for sure. The Aga Khan. What's her name? What's her name? Married the redhead. Married an Aga Khan.
Oh, Anne Margaret?
No, not Anne Margaret. Oh my God. Gilda. Oh my God, what is wrong with me? I'm losing it. Rita Hayworth.
Oh, okay.
Well, right? Rita Hayworth, I think, married the Aga Khan.
This guy is really old. He married Rita Hayworth and he's still breeding horses.
When I was at Colgate, in fact, the Aga Khan came and he was a tremendous squash player, and the like the llama, a big hitter, the llama. The Aga Khan came to Colgate and he played Brad Houston, who Brad Houston was the athletic director or the assistant athletic director. And Brad was the over 40 champion in the country, the over 40 squash champion. And the Aga Khan was like 75 years old. And Johnny, the Aga Khan tormented Brad. I've never seen a guy, and I play squash, and he could stand in the middle of the court and take like two little steps to the left, two little steps to the right, and he could flick. You ever play squash?
No, but I've eaten it.
But I'm bummed.
I've seen it. I know what it is. Yeah.
Well, it's different. It's very different from racquetball because the ball is dead. The ball is like this. You don't want to get hit by one either. I mean, it's not like a racquetball. It's dead as a doornail, and the Aga Khan could drop the squash ball anywhere he wanted. I've never seen anything like it. And he could just like take little, and he was like 75 years old, and he beat a guy who was the American over 40 champion. He beat him like a drum. It was unbelievable. That's my Aga Khan story.
It's a good story. Well,
he was a squat
in the Aga Khan family.
Well, by the way, he was a squat little thing too. He was like a little. He was sort of like a little Buddha. He was not like a svelte. He wasn't like Don Budge moving around the court.
His squash playing prowess is what attracted Rita Hayworth to him in the beginning.
I think it was his money. Don't I? I don't think it was a squash.
What I want to know is, did the Aga Khan, and I would have liked to have heard the conversation, whether Aga made the call or whether he took the call from Ken Ramsey after the race about Kitten's Joy. I would have loved to have heard that conversation.
I'll tell you. It was Rita. I was right. It was. It was Yasmin Aga Khan that Rita Hayworth married. I'm right on top of this. That's what I thought. Ali Khan, right?
I don't know.
I think I'm fascinated by the Khans.
Yeah, I've been Khan.
Well, and of course, there's the greatest cinematic moment in history, which is James Kirk screaming, "Khan!" It's the greatest. It's unbelievable. The Wrath of Khan. Johnny, we've managed to fritter away 45 minutes. I got to get to Charlie Lopresti. You painted me into a corner here. I got Charlie Lopresti, Wayne Catalano, Rusty Arnold.
Oh, that's a great lineup. You better get to it.
Thanks a lot. After you knit a Saudi flag on the air here,
you're gonna have to deal with it. You're gonna have to deal with it at some point.
I'll deal with it. All right. They might not like the way I deal with it.
Okay.
Not that you know. It's not like I'm a diplomat per se, so I don't think I have to worry about it.
Nah, you've never been accused of that.
Johnny, I appreciate it, and be sure to tune in for Keeneland, starting in an hour and 5 minutes.
Beautiful. Talk to you later, Stevie.
Thank you, Johnny. Huh?
How's the eye?
The eye is a gigantic. It's a headache. Let me put it that way. I mean, it's getting better, supposedly. In the meantime, every morning I wake up and this fakakta bubble that is in this gas bubble, the thing, it starts out up at the top, and then it takes about 6 to 8 hours for, you know, by about 4 o'clock, I can see normally, almost. It's enough already with the eye. I mean, another three. Tina keeps saying two more weeks, 3 more weeks, you'll be fine.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, hang in
but
there,
it
buddy.
It is annoying. I'll say that.
Hang in there.
I appreciate it. Let's take a break. Top of the hour coming up. We got horsemen by the bucket load. Lopresti, Catalano, Arnold. Stay with us.